This episode is brought to you by the American Homebrewers Association, a community of more than 40,000 fermentation enthusiasts from around the world. Visit homebrewersassociation.org for recipes, brewing tips, and conversation. That's homebrewersassociation.org. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, July 23rd, 2020. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, homebrewer Mark Stevens shares his experiment brewing low-alcohol beers by using very low and very high mash temperatures. What effect will stepping outside of traditional mash rest temps have on the beer? If you go to basicbrewing.com, you can find archives of our audio and video shows. If you go to basicbrewingshop.com, you can find our DVDs, our brewer's logbooks, and other Basic Brewing gear. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Basic Brewing and find our show page on Facebook as well. We have a cool Basic Brewing app on iTunes and Amazon.com, and we're found all over the place where fine podcasts are served up. If you want to support us financially, check out patreon.com/basicbrewing, and thanks to everybody who's helping out in that way. If you go to patreon.com/basicbrewing, you can see a long list of stuff that you can access if you sign up as a supporter. Financial supporters this week got an early release of our video episode on the delicious Black is Beautiful Imperial Stout. That is one tasty beer. And the rest of you will see that episode at the end of the week. This past week, Bob Stemsky shared some very sad news in the brewing world. Brew-in-a-bag pioneer Patrick Hollandale passed away. As I understand it, he had cancer. You've heard Pat Hollandale on the April 24th and October 2nd, 2014 episodes of this show. Pat was one of, if not the very first, to employ the single-vessel brew-in-a-bag technique. And that technique has had a huge impact on home brewing and has certainly changed my brewing for the better. No more fiddling with a Rubbermaid cooler for me, thanks to the work that Pat and others did. I enjoyed our conversations when he was on the show, and I raise a virtual glass to Pat and his contributions to our hobby. I have some good news to follow up the sad news. I'm very excited to announce we have a new sponsor, Groenfell Meadery. You've heard Ricky the Meadmaker and his wife Kelly on this show before. In fact, Ricky appeared on the show way back in 2009. As a little baby home brewer. Now Ricky and Kelly are brewing delicious meads up at Groenfell in Vermont. You may be asking yourself, what's that got to do with me? Well, now you can order Groenfell meads online and have them sent right to you. We've sampled Groenfell meads on the show, and they are fantastic. If you go to groenfell.com, that's groenfell.com, and to be honest, if you spell Groenfell just about any way in Google and put meadery after it, they'll show up. I tried it. Go to groenfell.com, where not only will you find an online store with delicious meads, you'll find all of their recipes and production techniques, because they are an open-source, family-owned meadery. Ricky says there's exciting news this week. They're releasing their first collaboration with Runamuck Maple to bring you Root of All Evil Maple Edition. With over 250 pounds of maple-infused ginger in a 1,000-gallon batch, this super limited release is available only in their online store. Yum! And don't forget to check out Ricky's videos on YouTube. Just search for Ricky the Meadmaker. So I'm very excited to have Ricky and Kelly as a sponsor. Check them out at groenfell.com. That's groenfell.com. Let's take a quick look into the mailbag. Kevin in St. John's, Michigan writes, listening to the Black is Beautiful show and you discussed variants of the brew. I'd planned to brew this in a week or so and have been wanting to try milk sugars for a while now. I'm thinking about making this a milk stout. Any suggestions on how much milk sugar I should add? Well, Kevin, I think this big imperial stout would make a delicious milk stout. It's already pretty chewy and creamy, or at least my batch was. I think I'd just substitute a pound or 450 grams of lactose for the dextrose that the recipe calls for and just call that good. I used a pound in my Count Chocula milk stout. I think it worked pretty well. I think I could have even added more in that recipe. But I think in the Black is Beautiful recipe, it might be overkill to add more than a pound. That's just my shooting from the hip. Let us know how it turns out, Kevin. And if you out there have brewed a bunch of milk stouts and have a different approach, shoot me an email, and I'll share your info with Kevin. Hey, our friends and sponsors Desiree and Dave from High Gravity in Tulsa have a new single-vessel electric system. It's the Warthog 5 to 10-gallon Spike Solo. It features a Spike kettle with a Solo brewing basket, no more bag, a Blickman boil coil, a Riptide pump, and the awesome Warthog EBC-130 electric controller, just like I have. This setup is fancy. If you go to highgravitybrew.com, you can see the Warthog Spike Solo, along with tons of options to fit the way that you brew. If you'd rather go two or three vessels, no problem. From 5 gallons all the way up to 2 barrels, HighGravityBrew.com can take the pain out of propane with an electric system that you will love, just like I love mine. I was thinking when I was brewing the other day that the Warthog EBC-130 controller is kind of like having a brewing partner who stays out on the patio or wherever you brew and keeps an eye on the mash temps and the boil level so you don't have to worry about it. I can go ahead and take care of other things. If you go to HighGravityBrew.com, and use the code EBC75BB, you can save $75 off your electric brewing purchase. Check it all out at family-owned and operated highgravitybrew.com. We greatly appreciate Desiree and Dave for their continued support of this program. Okay, how do you brew a low-alcohol beer that's still tasty and satisfying? Well, that's what Mark Stevens is investigating by using high and low temps in the mash tun. Mark Stevens, welcome to Basic Brewing Radio.
James, great to be here. Appreciate you having me on.
Yeah. Well, you sent us, or sent me, a bunch of beers. The first round, the Postal Service, I don't know what you said or did to the Postal Service, but but they mangled your package, and you were kind enough to send a second shipment to replace those that got wrecked in the first round. So thanks for your contribution.
No worries.
Now, what are we talking about today? We're talking about manipulating mash temperatures to the extremes on one end and the other, but why?
Well, I've been on this journey for low ABV beers for, I don't know, about 10 years. And actually, when I first moved back to the U.S., I used to live abroad. In 2010, I think it was your Rye Wit was one of the first low ABV recipes I found on the internet. And then from there, I discovered BBR. And so that's kind of how I got started on that. So I've been focusing on lower octane beers, say the 2 to 4% range, pretty much for the last decade.
Wow. And for just health reasons or moderation reasons?
Moderation. I like quantity. But I don't necessarily want to get drunk every night, or a lot of times I work in the Asia time zone, so in the evenings, and I like to have a couple beers while I'm doing that, but I also need to work, so I don't keep you out there.
Well, it sounds like a good approach. So your definition, I mean, I can't remember I don't remember the author's name, but she wrote a book on session beers, and we had her on the show, and her definition of a session beer was 5% alcohol. But back when I was in college, at least in Arkansas, if you had an ABV of 5% or above, you had to label your beer as malt liquor. So, you know, back then, 5% was an extreme in high alcohol beer. Nowadays, 5% is like it's like almost teetotaling.
Exactly. I think it was Jennifer Talley.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, and the Center for Disease Control, I think, has a beer equals one shot equals a glass of wine, and the beer is 5.5% alcohol. I think that's the standard, and I think that's the standard for your Bud, Miller, and everybody else.
Wow.
So, but, you know, to me, 5% is a big beer. and, you know, you've had Chris at Notch Brewing's been on the show, and he kind of drew the line at 4.5%. There's the traditional 3.2 beer target in states like Colorado used to have. But I've gotten to where I found quite a few are, say, 2-4% ABB type beers. The English ones, you know, the bitter stout porters. You have Czech lagers, a wheat, Grodetsky. Those are all, you know, good beers, good tasty beers in a lower alcohol range. And so these experiments kind of get you down to more like 1% from your home brew.
So that is low.
Yes.
It's only 0.5% above what is legally and technically known as no alcohol beer. So I think if you brew, you know, like non-alcoholic, you know, big boy beers, I think they're 5% or 0.5% and below. I think that's what classifies as non-alcoholic.
Right. I think that's the proper designation. So anyway, my whole goal is to have something that at least tastes better than a Bud Light.
That's a low bar.
Well, yes, but, you know, that's a starting bar.
Well, should we now, where should we start on the you're manipulating mash temperatures the extremely hot, or at least according to traditional guidelines, and cold. So which side should we start on, the hot side or the cold side?
Maybe we should start on the hot side.
Okay, and I've got some beers in front of me, and we should say that I don't know if it was the travel time or you know, the heat or what, but some of these beers on the hot side were a bit overcarbonated. But you usually don't bottle, right? You said that you usually keg.
Yeah, I've been kegging maybe the last 5 years. I used to bottle exclusively, and then kegging's just a lot easier. So I might have over-primed these, and maybe just because they're so low ABV or the travel or something caused them to ferment a little bit more than I figured on.
So first of all, there's one called Hot Control and 158. Is that the one that I should try first to kind of get a baseline of what is a sort of normal beer?
Yeah, why don't you do that? So that's just your basic mash at 158 for 60 minutes.
And this is just a pale ale?
Or call it English bitter. So it's 2.5 pounds Golden Promise, 3/4 pound of Crystal 60. I did your typical water treatment on that. And so that's just your standard kind of English ordinary bitter.
It's nice. Very nice.
And it's a 1025 OG, so it's pretty light.
Huh. I wouldn't have thought it was that that light. It's perfectly satisfying. I mean, just as a normal beer.
Good. Glad you like.
Oh, very nice.
Then the next thing I did, though, was I didn't decide. I'm standing on the shoulders of giants here. This came from Lalamond Brewing, they've changed their name, or sometimes it's Lalamond and sometimes it's LeBrew. Anyway, they came out with a thing that you could mash at 185 degrees Fahrenheit, which is about, 85 degrees centigrade, and then use either the Windsor or the London ale yeast because they ferment kind of differently. So if you mash really high, the sugars are different, and you can ferment differently. And so that's what the hot mash at 185 means, 185 degrees Fahrenheit.
So the next beer is hot mash. Wow, at 185 degrees. Now what's the mash time on this?
I think I did it for 60 minutes. I don't remember actually, but I did do it for longer than I normally do. And I did an iodine test to make sure everything converted, which it did.
Now it's definitely a different beer, but this is the same recipe.
Yes, same grist. What aroma difference do you see on that?
It's kind of a grassier.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to describe. It's different. It's got more taste, I mm-hmm. think, and grassy maybe, but not in a bad way.
More grainy on the extreme, maybe. It's a little bit more. I have to say, a little bit more astringent. There's kind of an astringency there that I didn't get on the first one. But you know, I would drink a pint of this. So, what are your impressions? What are your impressions? I'm used to relying on Steve for a lot of these.
Right. Talking about big shoes to fill. I think it's interesting, and what I've kind of come to discover about these really low ABV beers is that you know, they're pretty good for a pint, sort of the lawnmower beer. I don't want to drink a couple of them at once, but one's a nice mix up, and you know, it's a bit different and not in a bad way for sure. And I think if I do about 20 of these, I could probably zero in on the specialty grains and the hot mix to get something really tasty.
So what's your technique? I mean, what do you do differently? You mentioned specialty grains. They tell us that you shouldn't, you know, try to get your mash too hot, or you shouldn't add water that's too hot, or you shouldn't steep your grains in water that's too hot, because you'll pull astringency out of the grains. So what do you do differently from a normal mash?
What I did was I just heated the water to 185 degrees, or a couple degrees more than that. I didn't put the crystal in. I just did the base grain. So dropped it in 185 degrees. For smaller batches, I use a sous vide wand, so you can really dial in the temperature. And so I just held it there at 185 degrees for like an hour, and then I cooled it down to 158 to do the crystal, and did that for half an hour just to make sure I didn't controlling the variables as much as possible.
Yeah. And they say that that when you know, there are certain temperature ranges for different enzymes, and so as you go up, you know, you can start with a cooler mash, and say, you know, start with a protein rest, and then go up, and as the temperature rises, those protein enzymes will be sort of denatured. So you can go up in temperature and use you know, a variety of different enzymes, but going back down, they say, is not it doesn't work the same. So in theory, you shouldn't, if you did chill your mash down or cool your mash down and then add your specialty malts, one would think that the you know, those enzymes that are responsible for, you know, converting those starches into sugars would be denatured by that point. And so you wouldn't risk, you know, sort of creating more sugars when you added those specialty grains at that lower temperature. Does that make sense?
Yeah, makes sense to me. And plus, if I'm not mistaken, crystal's a steeping grain.
Right.
So you don't have to mash it. So
right.
It's just a put it in the water and let the sugars come out, or the flavors come out.
So theoretically, if you wanted to pull out another vessel, you know, like a smaller pot, and just steep those separately at the same time you're doing your, you know, main mash rest, you could do that too.
Oh, that'd be much faster. I'll have to remember that.
So what's happening, you know, chemically, or what, you know, according to your research, what's happening to those, you know, the starches and the sugars at that higher mash rest temperature?
So the simple science on this, and I can't go deeper than the simple science, is that you're altering or changing the wort fermentability to reduce some sugars that some yeasts, like Windsor, cannot convert into alcohol. So When you do a high mash temperature, you maximize the unfermentable dextrins in the wort and reduce the fermentable sugars. So you've got three kinds of sugars. You've got glucose and maltose, which can be converted into alcohol by all your brewing yeast and probably your bread yeast. If you increase the maltose type sugar, that's not fermentable by some yeast like Windsor, like London Ale, like there's a couple in the vault at White Labs that can't convert the maltose sugars. And then on the other side, there's maltitrose and DP5. So I guess 4 and 5 molecule sugars are not fermentable in general by brewing yeast. So if you wanted to say this a different way, you're using the high mash temperature to inactivate the beta amylase enzyme. Mm-hmm. And the beta amylase enzyme generates the majority of fermentable sugars. And at the same time, it still has alpha amylase, which can break down the starch into longer chain dextrins and sugars. And so that's a really long-winded way of saying that you're changing the wort so there's less of the sugar that these specific yeasts can ferment and more of the sugars that are not fermentable. Ipso facto, you have lower ABV.
Now, this is not necessarily a lower calorie beer, right? I mean, if you still have the starches and sugars, you know, in the finished product, it's not necessarily gonna be a lower calorie beer than say a light beer, L-I-T-E beer.
Yeah, correct.
Even though you're starting with a lower starting gravity, so I guess you know you got that going for you.
Yeah, these are maybe couldn't possibly be more than 120 calories per 12 ounces, something like that, just because of the your starting grains are so low.
Now, I got to tell you that I like the hot control better than I like the hot mash. I got to be honest with you, Mark.
Fair enough.
So we've got two more beers on the hot side. We've got one that's labeled Hot Second Runnings and Hot Cold Mash. Where should we go next?
Sorry, let's do the Hot Cold Mash first.
Okay.
Okay, so this is getting into part two where I shouldn't even call it a cold mash. It's cold steeping of the grains. So cold steeping is, I think, first got traction with Dan Breese, B-I-E-S. He did a blog post. He's at Breese Malting. And there's also a HomebrewCon, I think, 2016 session where there's PowerPoints out there you can search on. Anyway, Dan came up with this idea of non-enzymatic mashing, or call it, quote-unquote, new, N-E-W. Personally, I prefer cold mashing myself. Anyway, what he did was you take your base grains and you steep them in water, about a 1-to-4 ratio, so a pound of grain, a pound of water, or 4 pounds of water. Typically, you could either steep that overnight, but you should put it in the fridge to make sure you don't have spontaneous fermentation starting with some off flavors. Or you can, if you've got a circulating pot, you could put it in there in a couple hours. It should be able to get all the sugars out. So anyway, this is sort of the cold mashing thing. And you get different flavors because the density of the wort increases. And anyway, it's just a different approach.
So this is on the cold side. We've gone from one side of the McDLT container to the other. So
that's right.
I like this one. I like this one a lot better than the hot mash, I got to tell you. And almost as much as the hot control. It's essentially just cold steeping a mash in the fridge overnight.
Correct. And then pour it off, strain it. Be very careful because when I first did this, I scorched two different batches and it comes out with a really nasty burned vegetable taste that will never, ever improve.
Huh. And why is that? What were you scorching?
It's the amount of trub or the amount of particles. It's just really thick. It looks like egg drop soup almost.
Oh my.
Oh, it's really big. So either, you know, filter it out. Now, since I first did that experiment, I have a 400 micron brew in the bag now that I filter things through. And that seemed to make it much, much better. But my first two batches, I didn't stir them. I just put them in and I just scorched the heck out of both batches. And I didn't taste them before I pitched the yeast. Otherwise, I wouldn't have bothered.
No, this one's not scorched at all. It tastes like a regular beer. So what was the starting gravity and the final gravity of this one?
10-12.
Wow.
And the final gravity was 10-4.
Huh.
Which I think translates to not quite 1% alcohol.
Huh. And so the advantage of mashing at this cold temperature is to have more of those unfermentable sugars in there so that you don't have the weak tasting beer, just a lower alcohol, yet satisfying with mouthfeel?
Let's see. So the science here is, again, I have to look at my notes, so forgive me. But
no.
So the enzymes are at a different temperature, right? Much, much lower. In fact, it was like 40 degrees in my fridge. But you still get the sugar extraction, and alpha and beta amylase are soluble in cold water, cool water. So you get the simple sugars, but you'll leave behind something like 75% of the starch and the dextrins.
Wow.
And yeah, that's basically the science on that. And of course, you're going to have to back off the hops. Or move towards more dry hopping or late additions. But I think I did this one with, 5 grams of East Kent Golding for 2.5 gallons.
For 2.5 gallons. Yeah, that's not a lot of hops. And there is a bitterness there. There's not a whole lot of hop character, but it's not too sweet, you know, it's nicely balanced there. So, yeah, I'd say that was a success. So where do we go next? We got, what is the hot second runnings?
Oh, so that was actually, I should have called it the cold second runnings. So I think... Well, differentiating between, because I started out doing these in cold, and then I discovered the hot, and then I figured, well, with the hot, I should do all the different scenarios. So I did a cold steep with the same kind of grain bill as the hot mash, and then second running, because so you've soaked these grains overnight in your fridge, and the enzymes are dead. So, but I didn't want to waste my grains because there's still a lot of sugars and dextrins in there. So what I did was I just made a table beer and you added mashed a half pound of 6-row because 6-row's got a lot of enzymes.
And so you added leftover mash or the what was left over from the what did you do, Mark? I'm confused, Mark.
Okay. So sorry.
And I can't blame it on the beer because there's not a whole lot of alcohol.
So I did the cold steep in the fridge overnight. I poured the water off and I did the mash on that, like at 158, I think it was. And I didn't scorch it that time. And that's what you said you like. And the yeast on the cold mashing doesn't matter. I don't think it makes a difference. But I used I've used a couple different ones. I forget what I used on that one. Probably it was one of the London the Fuller strains, White Lab 002. So that's the cold mash. But then I had all these grains left over that haven't been fully all the sugar taken out of them.
Right.
So I thought, hey, but they don't have enzymes, so let's just throw in some 6-row. And mash it again.
Oh, okay. That one a big. Okay. All right. I'm with you now. Okay.
So I did, although I learned, what was it, last week on your show that you don't necessarily have to use six row for extra enzymes, that the new modified malts are much higher.
You just read the spec sheet and figure out. and it's going to differ from manufacturer to manufacturer. So this one, what was the starting and finishing gravity on this one?
I did a 1025 OG, and it finished around 1012.
Huh. Well, it's nice. It's, again, it tastes like a normal beer. It has a substantial mouthfeel. It's got, I don't know if it's the yeast or the hops, but there's kind of a lemony character to this one.
I don't get that, but oh, it might be because it's Windsor yeast.
Hmm. It's nice though, whatever it is.
Yeah, Windsor's a little sweeter.
I'd drink a pint of that one too. That one I like almost as much as the Hot Control.
Oh, nice. Yeah, and as we're talking, actually all the hot ones, I use Windsor yeast. I didn't use the Fuller strain, sorry.
Okay.
Just correct myself there. So, if you don't want to waste the grains, you can do a second running or a second mash with the leftover grains separately. And then if you're like me, I've got backyard chickens, and so I throw the spent grains to the chickens, who turn it into fertilizer, which I put on my hop plants for the cycle of life.
It's the great circle of life. So we've got two more left. We've got cold and then cold control. So, and according to your labeling, these are hot mashed.
No, so sorry, and this is confusing. I know. The cold and the cold control are from my original cold steeping experiment.
Okay.
So that's with the Fuller strain. So if you wanted to try those, so what I did was I did the cold a couple times, and then I did the hot, and then when I did the hot mash, I said, hey, I should just use the same grain bill and do a cold mash. So I've got it, you know, I've got the hot mash, hot mash at 185 degrees. I have the hot mash at 158 degrees. Then I steeped to get the cold mash and did that one at 158 degrees, and then I did the second running. So I did the four scenarios there with the ones that are labeled hot. And then this cold one, I mean, you can taste them to see if there's much of a difference. But they were from my original round.
Okay. So the cold control was mashed at a standard mash temperature.
Correct.
That's a tasty beer. Now it's, what was it? What were the stats on this one?
That was, I mashed those at 150 degrees, fermented them in my garage, which was kind of cool, somewhere in the low 60s. The OG on that was 1012. The FG, I didn't write down, but around 1004.
Now that's got substantial, even though it finished low, it's got a, you know, it's not watery. So whatever you did with is this a different grain bill from the first, this first set?
I did 2 gallons of liquid, and I had steeped 2 pounds of Vienna and 2 pounds of Munich, and then fermented those. And fermented those with 3470 lager yeast.
Huh.
And used tetanang hops on that. And again, the tetanang maybe was 8 grams. I mean, it was not much. And then put those in the garage when it was still cool. That was probably more like in the high 50s, low 60s for that one. Mm-hmm. And that was an OG 1012. And I didn't write down the final gravity, but should be around 104, I'm guessing.
Now, this is a kind of a grainier flavor, this malt bill. It's kind of more interesting on the grain bill part of it. But again, this even this control that was mashed at 158, like I say, is not watery. It's just a nice, light tasting beer.
Good. Glad you like it. That's one of my – actually, Chris Loring from Notch Brewery, I think he said it on your show, that he just did Vienna and Munich 50-50 and then pitched 3470 lager yeast. And that's how he gets his – what is it? 8 Plato 1032 basic Czech recipe, which is quite nice.
I'll have to go back and listen to that show again.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we have the cold, which I assume is the same malt bill, but it was steeped in the refrigerator again.
Yep, over longer than overnight. That I think that was 36 hours steep because I forgot about it.
Oh, huh. So what was the final gravity on this one?
The OG on that one was 1022.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't write the final gravity, but I'm guessing maybe 1010?
It's a different beer. It's hard to describe. The grain character is different. Not in a bad way, but it's just... Okay, I'm sipping the first one. It's kind of, the grain character is kind of like normal beer. And then you taste the cold steep. It is a little sharper, maybe. I would say that the mouthfeel is about the same on both. I think I like the cold steep beers better than I like the hot ones. Just because the cold ones seem to have a kind of a more of a mild malt character. The hot mash to me, I did get a little. It sharpened up the astringency to on my palate. For the hot steep beers, I don't know if you agree with that or if you find that as well.
Well, that sounds pretty fair. And again, like I said earlier, both of these techniques, you're getting a different grain taste. Mm-hmm. And I think playing around, you do a dozen batches or so, you could probably dial in what are the right specialty malts, what's the right hops to use. Play around with your yeast a bit. It's a good way to do a low alcohol beer. One thing I discovered as I was preparing for this show, what I didn't do was try the cold steep and then hot mash it. So the day before yesterday on Friday, I didn't have work, so I did do that, and it's fermenting away right now.
Huh. Did it make any difference on the on the particles that that went into the, did it look like egg drop soup?
No, because I filtered it through my 400 micron brew in a bag this time. I was really careful and I stirred it like crazy, make sure it doesn't scorch. I think if you just filter it well, you won't have a problem with scorching. But man, my first two tries were a disaster.
Well, Mark, this has been fun. Every time we come across, a rule, somebody nowadays is out there breaking it as far as brewing is concerned. And so we're kind of rewriting the texts as we go along.
Absolutely. And it's kind of fun. I like experimenting. I mean, I've got my stable rotation of beers that I do. And then, you read something like cold mash or cold steeping or hot mash, and you go, wow, I got to try that, see how it flows.
Well, Mark, I appreciate it. And I appreciate your patience and your consideration and, shipping twice. And I'm glad I got to taste these. And it's food for thought for a future experiment.
Well, once again, appreciate being on the show. Love the show. Happy to be part of this. And, if listeners play with this, or I'll play with it slowly, try to dial into a really good recipe one of these days using these techniques.
Awesome. Thanks, Mark.
Been a pleasure.
Well, thanks again to Mark for the beers and the experiment. That sounds like a great reason for a small batch experiment. And it would be easy to do on the low temp side. Just mix up your mash and throw it in the fridge. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to James at basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our mobile-friendly shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody supporting us through our Patreon page. Special goodies coming your way. Check that out at patreon.com/basicbrewing. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dotson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. Talk to you next time, everybody. In the meantime, stay well and stay tuned. So long.